shut your face. We speak the truth here. We only like to talk about the truth. Real life, nitty gritty shit. Okay. We don't like lies. We don't like liars. We like the real deal. And we also talk to some really cool people. So thanks for listening. Check us out on our Patreon and hit that follow button.
Miss Carol, how are you today?
I'm doing really good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Just a little bit about yourself. So I found you on TikTok because my stomach was hurting from laughing so hard. Like, your TikToks are hilarious. And I don't remember which one. You were doing one about the show moms, like barrel show moms.
Oh,
you had
yes,
the different
yeah.
ones. And I was like, this is like nail on the head. So
I have so much fun with it. It's such like a unique industry. It really is. So I just have fun making those videos. That's really kind of how it started and still how it is for me.
Yeah. So, okay, that's what I was going to ask you. So when did you start getting on TikTok and just said, I'm going to make these videos?
Right from the very beginning, I feel like right when it came out, we were in quarantine for COVID. Everyone stuck in the house. You weren't allowed to go anywhere. And I just started doing like the silly little dances that were trending at the time, because then I feel like I don't even think you could make videos with your own sound. You had to do the same kind of cookie cutter style videos. And everyone's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you wasting your time doing that? And I'm like, what else are we going to do right now?
Right.
Like, I need to keep myself sane somehow. And then, you know, before you knew it, my kids were jumping in on it and my friends were doing it. And I just kept going with it for no real reason when it got to the point where you could start to kind of add your own twist on things.
Yeah. I came in late in the game with the TikTok deal. Like, I didn't, you know, people were doing it a lot more before I come in. So you're right, though. People do these trending sounds and stuff like that.
Yep.
Now, why the horse industry, though? Did you grow up around horses? Have you always been around horses?
Yeah, it's kind of really all I've known. I never really planned to make a career out of it. It was always just something that was involved in my life. My mom was a groom for standardbreds for her whole life, so I was always in horse barns. So I grew up with her around the standardbreds, and then as I got older, I showed English for a little while and realized, like, I was really kind of doing that because that was all that was available to me where we live here in New Jersey. And then I started to dabble into Western and realized, like, oh, this is fun. I could do something with this. And just kept going with it, ended up barrel racing, and then turned it into a career. Now being a boarding barn, lessons, training, trail rides, and then rodeoing with my family as well.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. Mm-hmm. Horses is your full-time gig.
Yes.
Yep. And do you pretty much only focus on barrel racing?
It's our primary focus. There has always been a Western presence in New Jersey, but not a very accessible one. So we were probably one of three or four barns in the area that even offered Western riding at all.
I believe this.
So that was really helpful for us. We were able to get a lot of lesson students in that are kind of like, hey, this looks fun. I want to try it out. Can you teach me? And it just really kind of took off from there.
Well, I just seen a thing on TikTok, on Facebook, literally yesterday, a girl was talking about how, you know, resources for you guys when it comes to any type of horse discipline, but particularly, you know, performance horses like barrels and stuff like that, you guys don't have near as much stuff. The East Coast really doesn't have near as much as what the Midwest does. But
no.
The interest is so here. Like, there are so many people that want to do it.
Yeah, I am a little spoiled. This past year, we kind of pulled like a snowbird type thing, and I went down to Florida with my daughter. We got a place down there with a little barn, and it really spoiled me and made me realize even more the lack of availability for these type of things in the Northeast.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go to a jackpot or a rodeo any night of the week. You could pick between three or four facilities. Up here in New Jersey, we essentially shut down after Labor Day. Labor Day to Memorial Day, you're lucky if you find something once a month.
Oh, wow.
And then even during our busy season right now, there's really nowhere for the women to compete professionally within like a 7-hour radius right now.
No, you're absolutely, like, it's, I don't want to say it's a problem, but it presents itself as a problem for people that are really, like, at that place where, okay,
yeah.
Do I want to get serious about this hobby, or do I want to just keep it here? Because you literally don't have nothing. I mean, like you said, what decent person is going to sit there and take time off of work to drive a freaking week all the way to Texas or Florida?
Right, and you think you can make a living out of it, but what are the chances of that? You know, your expenses are probably always going to exceed your income with it. And it's kind of like, you know, like recording country artists. They're like, oh, you got to go to Nashville if you want to make it. Do we have to move out to Texas if we want to be a barrel racer? Like, probably not realistic for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, it does suck, though, because I literally was talking to a guy whose business is in Texas, and I told him, I'm like, I'm on East Coast, North Carolina. And I said, you know, like, jackpots here are 200 people, 250.
Yeah.
You're anywhere from 75 to 250. 250 is huge for us. Whereas on a Thursday night out there in Texas, you could do 450, 500 people easy.
Right, and think how much easier it is for those girls to collect their earnings to compete on a national level in comparison to where we just don't have as much opportunity. Now, you're saying, you know, 250 is your max. 100 here is a huge race.
Wow.
Yeah. To see over 100 riders, there's got to be a lot of added money. You're trying to pull people from New York and Maryland to come to that race. It's not easy to do.
Wow. I believe it, though. But you are luckily surviving. I've seen some of the TikToks with your barn, which looks gorgeous. It looks really big. So you offer lessons, you offer boarding, and do you do, like, one-on-one personal training? Do you take in...
Yep, we have a full lesson program. We have beginner lesson trainers for those that are just starting to get into it. And then when you get to the point where you're ready to compete, maybe get your own horse and really start working on like the biomechanics of it all, I'll take that student over and we'll start doing that and potentially traveling with the barrel racing a little bit as much as we possibly can in this area.
Right. Yeah, no, totally. I get that. Now, I also wanted to kind of talk to you about, where do you get your inspiration for your TikToks? Like, where do you, like, do you just think to yourself, you know what, this will be a good idea?
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like, I feel like my page took off when I stopped trying to do those cookie cutter, you know, put on a pretty face and really just became more genuine in who I am and not really cared so much about watching my mouth for brand deals and stuff like that. Once you become more relatable, I think people really come to that a whole lot more. Yeah. There's so many moms that are in this sport that it's their kids, the first generation that's doing it, and they're just figuring it out as they go. There's so many different aspects of it. There's the girls that do have their horses, and just, I've been doing like a horse mom series about the care of the horses, and girls like, oh, I've never seen that. I've never done it like that. And then, you know, the comments are coming in like, oh, well, this is how I do it. And I'm like, oh, well, I've never done it like that. Like, that's really cool. And it just makes such a nice avenue for like transferring information and knowledge.
That sounds like a good community, because I've talked about this multiple times. I don't know if you've listened to any of them, but you know, the horse industry can be some of the girls in the horse industry can just be just crappy ass people, and you just really don't want little girls to think that that's okay when they're coming up in it, you know. So the fact that you're doing that's really kind of cool, because you know, you can go to the moms and say, hey, this will help you help them type situation. Have you ever had to kind of deal with that, or what are your thoughts on that? I'm pretty sure you see that a lot.
Yeah, there's definitely, and I don't want to make it seem like the horse industry itself is cruel. I feel like it's anything you get into. If your kid's in soccer or any other sport, there's always going to be someone criticizing and critiquing the way you do things or the way you present yourself. So I don't think it's unique in that. I feel like all sports are like that. But I think it's important to also put out there, like, people are always going to have something to say about you. And that's fine. That's on them. You know, I think the mental game with it is really important. So my content is more like, who cares? Be who you are. Don't worry about them. They're always going to have something to say anyway. Do it for the reasons that you enjoy it.
Right, right. Yeah. And, you know, you are right. It isn't any sport that you go in, you know, and any sport that's a competition, you know. What do you think that, or what would you like for people to say from an experience with you at your barn, and they go to a lesson at your barn? What's your ultimate goal and that you want people to have as an experience when they leave your place?
Of course, that they they took something away from it, even if it was just one thing, and that they left feeling better about the situation. This is a sport where it's such a mental game, and it's very easy to have a bad ride and want to beat yourself up about it. But that's just going to carry over into your next ride. So definitely just want them to feel better about themselves when they leave and looking forward to that next ride. We do this because we enjoy it. So to allow people to take that enjoyment out of it for you, then what's the point? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some toxic barns out there. They literally toxic barns where it's like, mm-hmm. you are just fed into that narrative of you get to beat this person and you better do mm-hmm. this. You got to be perfect. You got to do that. But you're mm-hmm. right. Like at the end of the day, we're doing this for fun.
Yeah.
Like very exactly. small percentage actually does it for a living and has to be concerned mm-hmm. about doing it right all the time. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you know, it's fun. What's probably your biggest piece of advice that you could give young girls that are coming into the industry or that have never ridden before? What's the biggest piece of advice that you could give them going in?
If you're just coming into the industry, you do need to find a mentor to guide you the right way, because there's so many different aspects of it that if you don't know it, you're definitely at a disadvantage. You know, I'm not here to say that if you're a first generation cowgirl, it's not possible. It very much is, but you need good guidance yeah. of where to go, how to do certain things. You know, my trainer for me has helped me a lot to get to that next level, to be able to pick and choose what facility might be right for me and my horse to compete at. And then to get there and evaluate the setting and be like, okay, now what's my game plan? Because I can't go in and run a set of barrels the same way I do at home, because this pen is different. And maybe this pen isn't built for the horse that I have underneath me today. So how can I tweak the way I ride my lines and ride my horse to set them up for success? And if you're just coming into it and learning to stop and steer and stay in your saddle, that's a little bit above your pay grade in the beginning, and you need the right guidance.
Yeah, yeah. I do think that is important to be able to, a lot of people kind of want to come in up here mm-hmm. when you really need to start down here
yeah.
and learn just the basics, you know, because mm-hmm. you're right. Like if you're a young girl and you get all like starry eyed about, well, I want this big horse and I want this saddle mm-hmm. and I want this and this, but you can't mm-hmm. even sit correctly.
Yep.
You know, but that's yep. hard to tell young girl. I remember being young and you want to be a part of the cool crowd and you want to, you mm-hmm. know, you care about what people think at such a young age. We all do. Mm-hmm. So I get that. But so, well, that's good to know. Now, as far as you for you personally, aside from doing the lessons and all that stuff, you compete too.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yep. I do barrel racing, and I also started to get into breakaway roping. Unfortunately, very similar to the barrel racing, the breakaway roping has even less of a presence up here in the Northeast.
I bet so.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where if you want to just go to a little jackpot, you're going 4 or 5 hours away.
Jesus
So it
Christ.
Makes it makes it hard to, you know, you can practice at home. Like, then I'm making my husband buy a whole herd of calves for me to be able to, and he's like, come on, you know, but
yeah.
For me to go to a jackpot and only get to run 2 or 3 times traveling that far away, like, it just makes it hard.
Yeah. Yeah. How could you make that make sense? I'd be mm-hmm. questioning myself. I'd be like, why am I going to mm-hmm. do this? You know?
Right.
But that's right. up and coming.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but even when I was in Florida, I was in like central Florida, and, you know, even my farrier came out and I'm like, where can I find some calf roping here? It was all a lot of team roping. He's like, go a little further south. There's a lot of it.
Yeah.
So I hadn't gotten to that yet while I was there, but it's definitely more of a presence than up here in the Northeast.
It is a lot of cow horses down in Florida. I was mm-hmm. like kind of shocked at when I kind of started realizing how much of a presence Florida has with horses. Mm-hmm. I initially thought, no, it's not that many horses down there, but it's a lot of horses down
oh, yeah.
there.
Yep. Yep.
So have you been to Texas? What's the furthest you've been?
No, I've never been to Texas. I would love to go check out Texas and Oklahoma, but my biggest fear, I'd get out there and I'd be like, we got to move. We got
to move. She goes, I'm never coming back.
Yep. Because my daughter competes too. And again, I just kind of feel like I'm doing her. Every mom thinks that their kid's incredible, right?
You're a mom?
Yeah. Yeah. My
You don't look older than like 25 or 26.
No, my 11-year-old daughter, I feel like every mom thinks their kid is great, but my 11-year-old really has a lot of talent, and I feel like I'm doing her a disservice by keeping her here in New Jersey, where she just doesn't have the same abilities as those other girls. You know, I watch Dusky Lynn Hall on TV and I'm like, wow, you know, but she has so many opportunities there to get to that level.
Yeah, well, I think I told you, I think you know Kelsey Groh, she's with Chrome mm-hmm. Girl, and she's up that way, like Pennsylvania way, and we had her, yep. She was on here, she was really sweet, but she basically said the same thing. She's like, we've got a lot of nice horses, but nobody will ever know, because, or mm-hmm. nobody can ever do anything about it, because we're like mm-hmm. way over here, but everything's yep. all the way over here, and when I've spoken to people in Texas, or just kind of people in that area, they're not going to change. That's not going to expand. Not mm-hmm. them specifically, but you know what I'm saying? It's not like the industry yeah. is going to go, you know what? Let's move. So
no, because it's very alive and well there. They have lots of opportunities. All of the finals are out that way because that's just the central area.
Yeah, that sucks. Well, hopefully more things can become available in different mm-hmm. areas as the industry continues to grow. Like California, you think it wouldn't have anything. It's still growing. And you mm-hmm. might as well just do it out there. So that's great. Right. You know, so mm-hmm. hopefully that's the case. Now, as yeah. far as TikTok being, have you gotten caught up in the whole Lexi Ray drama?
I have. I mean, I see. I haven't been caught up in it. Let me clarify. I have not
yeah,
been caught up in it.
Yeah, I didn't mean caught up like that. I meant like, did
but
you see
I've
it?
I've seen it. And honestly, the best way for me to describe it, it's rage bait, right? Everyone sees it and they're like, they want to give their input, whatever. My input, she is a marketing genius. The girl is a marketing genius. She is. And honestly, she's probably got a thicker spine than I do, because she has to tolerate so much negative commentary. And I think it's all like a facade.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Because I was sitting there thinking to myself, this girl is having a heyday with y'all. Mm-hmm. Like, she mm-hmm. is having a heyday. Mm-hmm. And y'all think mm-hmm. it's hurting her. And, mm-hmm. well, I am going to say this. We're all human. And when you're attacked on any level, it will affect you behind closed doors. I don't care how
absolutely.
Badass you make yourself to be, mm-hmm. you know. But you're right. She's got mm-hmm. a hell of a backbone. And mm-hmm. But it also kind of leads me to the whole thing. It's like, why do we care about what is considered country or not? Why don't we just be open to that?
I think it's hard because I feel like for anyone who is in the industry, it's very easy to look at someone and judge a book by its cover and be like, you're not a real cowboy because of the jeans that you're wearing, the boots that you're wearing. You know, you go to a country concert, it's the same thing.
Right.
Actually, one of my videos, not to be malicious in any way, I'm like, I'm going to post 4 videos of boots with jeans, just people's feet. You tell me which one the real cowboy is, because you can tell when you look at those things. But at the same time, for our industry to survive, we need those people that want to pretend to be a cowboy or eventually want to become a cowboy, that want to learn how to ride, that want to pay for a ticket to come watch a rodeo. Our industry thrives on those people. And I think it's kind of like everyone right now is in their cowboy era, and our industry needs to take advantage of that. So you may not like that person or the way that they present themselves. It may not be the same way that you do, but they're still very important to what we're doing.
Yeah, I agree 110%. Yeah, I haven't even kind of looked at it like that, but you're right. I mean, we need mm-hmm. that, we need the guy at the bottom to get to the guy at the top, you know, like mm-hmm. that's where that starts. Everybody, none of us were born on a horse.
Right.
You had to learn at some point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yep, everyone's been there.
Yeah. So, now let me ask you this. What goals or where do you see your business in the future? Are you eventually just going to stay where you're at, or do you hope to maybe move somewhere else, or what do you look to see to do?
It's always one of those things that is kind of up in the air. I've only ever lived here in New Jersey and would hate to leave it knowing that there's still so much to be done here. But again, at the same time, at some point, I want to present my daughter with the same opportunities that other little girls have in Texas and Florida. And, you know, the other thing is kind of like when the girls compete here in New Jersey, you can have a 1D horse here in New Jersey. And then we like to go down to Asheville, North Carolina for the Super Show every year.
Stop it.
And sometimes our horses that are 1D horses here in New Jersey get to that Super Show and that same horse is a 3D horse because the competition is just different.
Yeah. Yeah.
So So I don't really have the answer to that. Who knows where the wind will blow us? But I just want to be able to continue to do what we love with our horses and see where it takes us.
Just the winter in itself would have me wanting to shoot my brains out. I don't know how you do it.
Well, yeah, and that, and you know, like, we try to keep our horses going through the winter, but a lot of times you're restarting them come March or April, and you know, then your season starts in April, May, and you just don't quite feel ready. You know, this year we were at a big advantage because we did go down to Florida and kept our horses in shape and kept them running. So when our season started here, we were right back to it.
Yeah. I mean, how are you supposed to keep one legged up if you've got 3 months out and you can't literally can't do anything?
Yeah. I mean, we do. I'm super lucky. We do have a little indoor arena here, not big enough to run a pattern in. But most of the girls here, if you're riding outside, the ground's frozen. So what are you really working on?
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, you know, hopefully whatever is meant to be will be, you know.
Exactly.
That's I totally get you on that. Now, does she ever, I did see one TikTok, you have an older mare, right?
Yes.
And you were like freaking out a little bit because you were like, where's she at? Where's she at?
Yep.
How old is she?
She didn't come with paper. She's probably 23, 24 now. She was kind of the horse that really brought me out of my shell and just did a lot for me emotionally, where I was really reserved, but I could get on that horse and just be fearless, you know, because I just, and she wasn't super sane. She was always a little kooky, blind in one eye, but for whatever reason, when I sat on her, I just trusted her.
Yeah.
So I ended up, even my first rodeo I entered on her, we won the breakaway, the first rodeo I ever entered at a big rodeo in Gary, New York. So she's just done so much for me. And then, you know, when I was able to move on to a bigger horse, my stepdaughter rode her, earned a state champion title on her. So she's just, again, I could never speak highly enough about her. So now she's completely retired. In my opinion, she's done her job. She just kind of eats and sleeps and enjoys life and gets loved on. So yeah, that video, she had taken a little bit longer to come up into the barn than I would have liked, and I really started to panic.
No, I totally related to that video because we had two that we kept up to 30 and 32 years old, and when they get a certain age, you're kind of like, you get like that, you're like, okay, you know, am I gonna find them in a pasture or where are like, you start panicking. But no, I've said this, a good mare will take care of you. Crazy or not, they will absolutely take care of you. That's very relatable because that's funny because I want to ask you your thoughts on this. I saw this girl posted this thing in a Facebook group, and bless her heart, she just was like, we've all been there as cowgirls or horse owners or whatever you want to call it, where we're with this horse, but we're just not clicking. Like, we're just not hitting it. But you don't want to give up because it's a trait of us. That is a good thing for all cowgirls across the board. We don't give up very easily. And bless her heart, she's just pouring her heart out into this little post about, I've done this, I've done that, I've done this, I've done that, but I just can't sell her. And everybody's like, sell her.
Yeah.
Sell her. Because you're actually not doing her any good by not letting her or whatever, gelding, whatever you got, go on to possibly a better home.
And a more suitable home. You know, as soon as you started talking about it, I had one horse probably 2 or 3 years ago. And I originally bought her for my daughter, and I was going to put some work into her to make her more suitable for her. But I fell in love with this horse. I got on her, and it just, everything just meshed. It clicked, like you talked about. But I wanted her to breakaway rope on. And instantly, box sour, rearing up in the box. And I'm like, okay, let me see how she is on the barrel pattern. And then having very similar issues on the barrel pattern. And I'm like, well, I don't need another trail horse. And that was it was the hardest decision I ever made. But sometimes selling that horse because it's not what you need right now is also doing a service for that horse. Yeah. And she did go and find a trail riding home, and that's the most suitable job for her. It sucked for me. It broke my heart. I didn't even want to go out and ride for a while after I got rid of that mare. But I think in the end, we do have to make those really hard decisions sometimes where this just isn't the right match for me.
Yeah. And well, and some, another kind of conversation I saw, these, everybody was kind of giving another person a hard time. They were like, if it's your heart horse, you won't let it go. Not necessarily. I mean, like, if you actually love the animal, you will let it be happy.
Yep. Rather than pushing them to do something that maybe they don't enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
I think it's cool as hell you do Breakaway, because I love Breakaway. I think it's like, it needs to have way more attention than it, and it's starting to get more. It really is. It's starting to become a way bigger thing.
I think when we finally see it at the NFR with the other events, that's when it'll be like, we did it. We made it. Now it's going to happen. Deal. Well, I hope so.
Kimes had a big event for Breakaway, though. With Kimes, I believe. It was a pretty big event that happened. So, and that's kind of new. That's not like something that's been standing for a long time. Now, as far as like barrels are concerned, when did you know that you wanted to do barrel racing?
I met my husband. He came to my stepfather's farm and hosted like a Western fun show type thing. And I was just there working, feeding the horses. And I don't know why. I really just didn't even know the extent of it. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, wow, this looks like, and again, I was showing English. I was showing in the equitation where you're going in the show ring and girls are throwing up off the side of their horses because they're so scared to go in with the judge. And then I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, this looks fun. Let me try this. And it just kind of transpired from there.
It is a lot more fun. I mean, I've never done it, but I did grow up like Western Pleasure and very much like that area. And once you kind of see, it's like, not that it's more laid back. It's way more competitive. But it is a more laid-back kind of environment. You don't necessarily have to be perfect. Because you kind of think back to yourself, like, with equitation probably, like, why the hell did I do that?
Yeah. Like, why do we pay someone to judge us? You know what I mean? Like, the whole concept of it is kind of like, why do we put ourselves through this?
Somebody was like, horse girls are crazy. Well, we literally pay somebody to judge us and tell us that we're doing, like, crap.
And then for ribbons, like, then when I got into the barrel racing, I'm like, oh, you can win money back doing this?
I think the other disciplines are starting to kind of come around, because over the last couple of years, especially with ranch coming up, you know, more, you see a lot more payouts happening, which I was thinking to myself, too, why did we do this for a ribbon? Like you see these barrel racers or breakaway, even breakaway ropers, they get good payouts. Like, y'all are doing this for money?
Yeah, what have we been doing this whole time?
Hell if I know. Now, do y'all get into the whole 4-H deal? Like, for your young kids, do you get into that?
We never have. It's, again, not really prominent here. It exists, but more like rabbits. I feel like rabbits are, like, the big thing. When I went down to Florida, then they have, like, the cows, the pigs, all of it, again, just doesn't really exist here.
That sucks. You do need to move. I've got some customers that are up there, I told you, and then other ones that are kind of up there, and there, it's like, I didn't realize it was just that small. I mean, you could think that it is small, obviously, but, you know, sometimes you just don't think how limited you are, but I guess that's why everybody ends up going down to the Midwest. I mean, why wouldn't you? Now, as far as some of your idols in battle racing, who are some of the people that you look up to?
I love, like, a female pioneer, right? Like, my whole aura is boss mare energy. So, in barrel racing, I'm going to be a little cliche here. I love Fallon Taylor. Not only because she's such a role model for young girls, but she's transparent. She's very relatable. She shares everything with everyone to make herself really relatable, but I think people don't give her enough credit for also being such an intelligent businesswoman as well. And you know, when I was having some issues, our only local rodeo here in the area ended up pulling the women's professional events, so leaving no one in WPRA to compete here without going to upstate New York to the Painted Pony Rodeo. And she reached out to me and she's like, hey, this is what you need to do. Like all for it. Super proud of, you know, the attention that you're giving to it. Try this. So I've always just been a huge fan, again, not only because of the persona that she exudes. She's really, like I said, just been a pioneer for the girls that are getting into the industry. Not only because of the way she physically presents herself. She, you know, she came out with the tie dye and the fringe and the helmets. You know, she was making it normal for girls to be like, listen, you don't have to wear a cowboy hat. This is safer. You can do this and still look cool. So all of that together just makes it. Makes her so admirable to me. And then in the same breath, you know, you talk about Breakaway, it has to be Jackie Crawford. The first time I ever saw her, she's, I don't even know what event it was at, but she cut the horn off her saddle to be able to break away while she was pregnant. I'm like, who is that woman? That is insane, but I love it.
That's badass.
How do you not look up to someone like that?
Yeah.
And then it's so funny. When you, you know, sent me that question earlier to just kind of think about it, I was like, who is that one girl? I couldn't think of her name. And I was also looking through your page and I'm like, wait a minute. She had her on the show. The girl I'm thinking of.
Who?
Hunter.
Yeah. Love her.
I don't know her from Adam. Just followed her on everything. Still a very small creator, but in the cutting world, what a badass, right? I'm like, you're awesome. The again, the way you present yourself, you're different, but very unique and true to who you are, unapologetically you. Love that. That type of persona to me, I'm just like, you're awesome. I have to follow you. Love everything you stand for.
She is so cool. She is so cool.
Right?
I'm like you. I think that, and you know what? You probably agree with me when I say this. To be a boss, a lot of people think that it's like they'll get misconstrued with a mean girl energy. Mm-hmm. To me, I think if you're a boss like you, and even like the girls you've mentioned, like Hunter and Fallon and all of them, they actually aren't like that at all. They're very much like, hey, you need to be nice. You need to, you mm-hmm. need the way that you lead by an example and to be mm-hmm. kinder to others and think and mm-hmm. stay in your own lane and do your own thing. Like, to me, that's really what boss is, because you don't yeah. ever see any of those people acting out. You don't see them making fun of other riders. Like, I saw mm-hmm. that post where this person took a video and then uploaded it and making fun of somebody at a barrel race. Like, why would mm-hmm. you do that?
Mm-hmm. And now I feel like there's very much stay in your own lane, but there's a good time and place. I think some of my most memorable TikToks, to me at least, and really kind of where my page took off, is in those exact moments like you were talking about. There was one girl who someone had screen recorded or stitched her video making fun of the way she rode. And I'm also very mama bear, where if you're gonna come at someone like that, I'm gonna come at you harder, and I'm gonna put you in your place and be like, this is not okay. Yeah. A lot of people who, you know, when I was posting videos of my daughter and calling this her professional career, and someone said, you know, like, how can it be, she's 10 years old, how is it a professional career? If you don't understand the industry, you wouldn't understand it. And how are you going to come on here and criticize a 10-year-old little girl with dreams bigger than the sun when she has the capabilities of making those things come true? And it just so happened that same person I kind of clapped back at, I had probably 15 messages come through. Like, that woman was so rude to my daughter. That woman critiqued my daughter, stitched her video. Thank you for saying something. I'm like, it's not okay. So again, I'm never going to go out of my way to criticize someone. If you do something your way and that works for you, awesome.
Yeah.
I'm never going to criticize you. But if you're going to say something about other people, know damn well that I'm going to say something back.
Yeah, no. Well, they came in your lane. That's how I look at that.
Exactly.
Like, that's how I look at that. Because you're right. Like, sometimes you just have to kind of say something about certain things. Because we, you know, it can just be, I think social media makes it worse because it makes it so much easier.
Absolutely.
For people to just say something and then go to bed. Whereas mm-hmm. you're not going to hop in your car and drive to somebody's house and say it to their face.
And say that. Exactly. And a lot of times, again, you're watching maybe a 15-second video, 30-second video. You don't understand the whole background of what you're watching, where that horse came from, how long they've had them, what obstacles they've already overcome. So it's so easy to judge someone based off of those things, but so not fair at the same time.
I haven't really known of Fallon well. Like, I knew of Ranch Dressing and I kind of knew she existed, but didn't really mm-hmm. follow. But I found to like her when she was very transparent about a particular thing when she was going to set up as a vendor for her business and stuff like that. And she was just very like straight up, like, this is how much it costs. This is what mm-hmm. happens. This is blah, blah, blah. And I think it was really cool. Like you said, cause I looked at her and was like, okay, I can relate to what you're saying. Like, this mm-hmm. is really helpful. Like, not yeah. every business would do that. This is actually mm-hmm. really cool that you're doing that. So mm-hmm. she kind of won me over when she done that. Not that she cared, not that, you know, they care, but you know, I that's cool to hear that. We also had, Trisha Aldridge, she's with yep. Adios or whatever. Mm-hmm. She's hilarious. Her whole social media is hilarious because she gets mm-hmm. attacked. She told me that she gets attacked kind of constantly yep. with her stuff.
Yes.
And I'm like, I don't know. To be honest with you, you have to have horse people that are willing to step up and say something mm-hmm. because you also have a lot that are hush mm-hmm. hush.
Yeah.
And I would rather have somebody passionate enough to sit up and say, you know what, this isn't right. You don't need to do that. Versus being around or sitting in a crowd of horse people that aren't going to say anything.
Yeah. And, you know, with Trisha, a lot of people have something to say about the way that Adios acts with her. First of all, he's a stallion. Okay. We can control them to a certain extent, but he's still a stallion.
Yeah.
And really, her entire answer is, okay, but look at the results.
Yeah.
Okay. If we're going to allow him to be spirited and be who he is, but he performs, I'm going to ignore a lot of those things because I'm okay with it and you don't have to deal with it. You know,
yeah, so they're not riding the way. They're not riding him. They're not, it's not their horse.
Like, exactly.
You know, I'm not a champion trainer either, but we had a mare. She was mine. She did perfect in certain areas, but there were certain areas that we ignored because it's a matter of, okay, pick your battles.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pick your battles with a horse. The perfect unicorn doesn't exist.
Yep. And just know the type of rider that you are. Like, I also, I had gone to a race and Trisha was there. So I got to see Adios, who really was pretty well behaved every time I had eyes on him in the holding pen. Bailey Choate's a perfect example. Her horse Boozer, I mean, is rocking up and down in the holding pen and acting a fool. And goes out and lays down a really nice run. You know, there's not very often she goes to a race and is not in the top of the 1D. For me, I couldn't ride that type of horse.
Right.
Full transparency. Just a little too crazy for me. I want something that's going to warm up quietly and then turn on just a little bit when we go to run in. So I know that horse isn't suitable for me, but good for you that you're able to handle those things. I'm not going to say anything negative. Why would I?
Right.
Again, your results speak for themselves.
Right. Yeah. We need a lot more of your mentality. Because I like that. I like the way that, like, okay, if that works for you, cool. Great.
Yeah.
I'm going to do me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is, it's definitely an industry where it's not universal. You're going to find along the way that you have to tweak things for certain horses, and different, you know, I had put up a video one time, like, what's your pregame method? What do you do before you run? And that's not only as far as like supplement, but mentally, what do you do? Another reason I really related to Fallon Taylor is all of the talk she gives about like your mental game going into it. What are you thinking about? How do you clear your head? You know, at one point, I still tell my daughter this when she's going in, she has a really nice mare now, but it's a lot of horse. And she's going in and she says, I'm nervous. I'm like, no, you're not. You're excited. Say it to yourself because it retrains your brain. And that was something where I started doing that. I'm like, it does. It does retrain your brain. And then not only after your run, maybe it wasn't the run that you were expecting, but there's a certain way to think about it so that, you know, you stay on a positive note. You're not beating yourself up. And, you know, every video, even Fallon's videos, I don't know if she has the camera on her helmet or the glasses, but she'll let you ride along with her. And then she's patting her horse at the end. And she's like, you did your job. You don't know if you won or lost. Thanks for the ride. We got some stuff to work on, but I'm still happy with it.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, you just made me think about something. What was your biggest challenge, mental challenge, throughout your career thus far? Mm-hmm. What's one of the biggest things that you had to overcome in your head when it comes to showing?
So I was, when I met my husband and I started barrel racing, I like to think I was pretty fearless. I was on a couple of horses that were not very sane. It was the type of horse you get on, you make a run, you get off. And I was okay on those type of horses. And then I had kids. And everything changes because then I was sitting on the sideline for almost 2 years by the time I got through the pregnancy and got over the pregnancy. And then I had the next one. So to sit on the sideline for 2 years and then try to get back on, I felt like my balance had completely changed. Now I'm scared to get hurt because I have children to care for. And those same style of horses that I was so fearless on before, I'm now freezing up on. And there's still, I have to be honest, there's still some days where I get on and I'm like, I tell my husband, you got to warm this horse up for me today. Like, she just doesn't feel herself and I'm not comfortable doing it. So again, it's just a matter of kind of knowing what your limitations are, finding someone that can help you with it. So for me, that little rope horse that I told you about before was really the one that brought me out of my shell and let me get back in the saddle and let me feel free again to the point where I could just function without like blacking out when I'd go in to make a run.
It is a big head thing because I don't think people realize how much confidence you have to get on a horse, period. First of
exactly.
all. But to do, like, you know, what you said, it's different when you're 20 and 18 mm-hmm. and you just don't care. You have no responsibility. Yep. You're like, okay, mm-hmm. I'll act like yep. a cowboy. Uh-huh. But then you start to grow up and health insurance, not even kids, health insurance, mm-hmm. a job, pay your bills, all that good stuff. Like mm-hmm. to act, I've seen a lot of people act like, okay, well, you're not badass if you don't know. You have to think realistically here.
Yeah.
And think about those things. And it's hard to just set them aside and ignore them. But you're right. Like, that's a hard mental game, though, to tell yourself that that's not necessarily a confidence issue mm-hmm. as much as it is just a...
like, realistic.
Yeah. I got to think yeah. about other things right now.
Yeah.
What did you tell yourself, though, as far as to keep going? Like, do you just kind of work around it? Or do you just...
I try to get... I know it's not realistic for everyone, but I try to ride as much as I possibly can. I try to ride all of my horses so that when I get on them, I kind of know what they're going to do. And if something feels weird, I know it because I just know them like the back of my hand. And it's just also so hard in this sport because when we have those feelings and those emotions, now our horse feels it.
Yeah.
And now we're almost... asking something bad to happen if we can't overcome those emotions. So you have to kind of just swallow it and deal with the emotions that you're dealing with so that you don't create that issue.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's not an easy sport.
No, it's not. You are right, though, because back to what you were talking about with your mare who kind of takes care of you and helps you build that confidence. I had bred mine a couple of times. It didn't work out, blah, blah, blah. And it was totally my fault. I take full blame to this day. She had been up because she was so far along. We already mm-hmm. had the stall like busted out. We were waiting, but mm-hmm. she had stillborn twins. So we just kept her up a little more after that before mm-hmm. we put her back on fescue, like out in the hay pasture.
Mm-hmm.
My dumbass decided to, I'm going to ride her without letting her out first. And it was completely mm-hmm. my fault because as soon as I cinched her up and got on her, she went up in the air. I went down. She come down. It was a big old thing. And that was probably the first time that I had ever, I called my mom up and I was like, I'm going to need you to come hold this horse, you know, and you're like, that's when it kind of hits you. You're like, okay, I'm not Superwoman. I yeah. am scared right now. Let mm-hmm. me get myself together, you know, mm-hmm. but I took full blame for the situation. It was my fault. Yep. I should have never tried to ride her. I should have mm-hmm. let her out first. But it is like I'm relating to what you're saying because, you know, even I don't care how long you ride or how much you've been around them. We've all kind of had those situations where you're just like, okay.
Yeah. Deep breaths.
Yeah. You got to do this, though, because it's uh-huh. hard. It's hard yeah. to take that fear out of your brain mm-hmm. and suck yeah. it down and like, I got yep. this. And I did, yep. though. I had to get back on her right then and just kind of walk it off to. A little bit, you know, and mm-hmm. then put her back up. But I remember that distinctly because my mama was like,
yeah.
You want me to what? uh-huh. You know, but I think it's good for us as cowgirls or just girls in the industry, period, to hear that from another person. Because oh, yeah. it makes you feel more human. You know,
of course.
You've got yeah. other people out there who make it out like, you know, if you can't ride a buck, you don't need to be riding or whatever, you know, just make it out to be a certain thing. And I'm sitting here thinking, mm-hmm. if you've never fallen off, you've never ridden.
Right, right.
You know,
so. It's also, you know, like back to like, I teach lessons to kids. So after they take their first fall, you know, first I have to prep the parents. Like, listen, it's not if, it's when. And when it happens, do not come running into the arena screaming because half the time the kid's not even hurt. They're just scared and you're going to make it 10 times more magnified. So stay where you're at. Let me handle it. We have to make it like it was not a big deal. We're getting our, if we're not going to the hospital, we're getting back on. And deep breaths, and you got this. We can fix this.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just, it's good to be able to hear that from even adults, or just mm-hmm. everybody to hear that. That's one of the cool things about Fallon, because she does post literally all of it. The good, yeah. the bad, the ugly, yes. all of it. She shows all mm-hmm. of it. And it's like, mm-hmm. okay, she's not that intimidating. She is, like, right here with us. Okay, yep. that's cool. Well, not with me. I'm not going to barrel race.
And now that you say that, though, I had posted a video one time when Trisha was running her horse somewhere, and I said, this is probably the only sport where you're going to ride right along next to your idols. You know, you like these big soccer players and big basketball players. You're never going to compete with them. We're in the holding pen with the people we idolize. How crazy is that to think about?
That is crazy. I wouldn't be able to run. I would be right. so nervous. I'd be like, right. Don't look
but
at me.
But at the same time, it's also one of those sports where you're never always at the top. Anyone can have a bad day, a bad run. Your horse can slip. Anything could happen, and you could just like that, 1D to 4D. Like, in the blink of an eye, the smallest little thing. I love when people post those, like, I don't know, those ghost or phantom videos, they call them, where they overlay, like, a 1D rider and a 3D rider, and the horse is, like, right behind it. Have you ever seen those?
No, I'm going to have to look this up.
It's so cool and really just reminds you, like, it's okay if you're still a second off those horses. When you watch them, like, come through the turn, and you'll see the 1D horse just a split second in front of that 3D horse. And sometimes that 3D horse on the long stretch in between the barrels will get past them a little bit. And then in the turn, that 1D rider gets to the front again. You're going to have to look it up because it's so humbling.
Yeah.
To be like, it, like, you're still doing a good job.
Yeah, because you're right. Those time slots are, like, milliseconds. And yeah. Like, not like, you look at it, you're like, oh, one, two, three, wow, I'm really that bad. But no, if you look at the times, it's like, you know.
Yeah.
I just almost forgot about something that I was going to ask you about. Maybe it'll come back to my head in a second. My brain's, like, everywhere. You are right, though. That is really nerve-wracking to be able, I wouldn't be able to run if I was sitting there beside, like, a person that I idolized or looked up to in my sport.
Mm-hmm. But it's nice to also be in the pen with them and see, like, they're a little nervous too. You know, they're trying to keep control of their horse too. Their horse is anxious. You know, they're dealing with the same exact things that we deal with, and still just competing on such a level that they are. So it's just so unique.
And I think it's great that we have TikTok, too. I found most people that have been on this podcast through TikTok, one. Two, have been so nice. Like, literally, you know me from nobody, and you're just like, yeah, I'll do it. Whatever. You know, and I'm like, that's the coolest thing ever. But TikTok has also been able to, obviously, with other industries, but with the horse industry, you get to see how other people are living, and you feel more normal. You feel like, oh, I do that, too, or, oh, I used to do that, too, or, yeah, you know.
Yep.
So that's really cool. It's cool that you provide that, too, in your community, because you have got a community of people on your account. Like, that's really cool that you built that.
Yeah, and I said to my trainer recently, it's funny how, you know, like, the algorithm works in mysterious ways, right? And it's brought a lot of horse people and horse moms to my account, but also so many people that are like, I don't own a horse, I'll never own a horse, but I love just watching this. Like, I just learned something. The way I run my horses in for feeding, and they all just know where their own stalls are, people are like, oh my gosh, that is so cool. And horses are so smart, and I had no idea. And I'm like, yeah, like, so it's really cool that it also brings in, kind of like we were talking about earlier, to come full circle, people into the industry that maybe didn't consider it before, but they're like, wow, I want to know more about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you are right, because we, it's great to have that aspect for the industry for new people, because you do have the other side, just like with all other industries.
Yes.
When an animal is involved, it just makes it a completely different ballgame. Because we're still just not like soccer, we're not like dance, we're not like any of that stuff. We have another animal, and then you have people that want to take up for the animal, which is great. You should have that, absolutely, we should have that. But we should have the ones that are educated, and not the ones that are not educated. You know.
I think the more that we can put out positivity, you know, our industry is one where we love our animals.
Yeah.
You know, we care for them because not only do we enjoy them, but they're a lot of times our livelihood as well. Or what we do for a living, we fund, you know, those horses with. So I think the more positive experience you can put out to people that have never seen it before, the better for the industry for sure.
Did you see that TikTok of the girl in Brazil with the barrel races?
With the rules that they have for their barrel
racing? Yeah.
Yes.
You saw the one I was talking about? I chatted about it just a little bit, this one that just went out. And then I kind of spoke to her vaguely, not a lot. But I think it's cool as hell to see that, like, we don't do that here.
No.
And they were flipping out. Not flipping out, like, in a bad way. But they were just like, what? I mean, they weigh the rider. They look at the bit. They do all that kind of, like, the regulations are insane.
Yes.
But they're still very successful. It's still a very growing sport down there.
Right.
Like, they, a lot of people do it. And I don't think Americans realize that, one, it exists outside of our country, but two, that they do that stuff out there. It's like that with the horse racing industry. Like, people think they're so bad to horses that race. No, they are insanely, like, watched over like a hawk.
Yep, because there's so many rules and regulations. A lot of the things that she was saying was really unique, and I think a lot of it was for the betterment of the industry, you know, making sure the horse doesn't have any blood on them from your spurs or the bit. The weight thing kind of, I was like, oh, like, it's kind of a gray area, you know, like, they were talking about a specific weight for the open class. Like, my 11-year-old daughter runs in the open class. She's not going to meet those weight restrictions, so I have to put weights on her, you know, and now you got to train with those weights on your horse's saddle so they don't feel heavier when you go to run. It was kind of like when I showed English, you always jumped a little higher at home, so when you went to a show, it was, like, easier, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot, and I'm sure it's very defined where it's there, but that whole interview of what the rules are really got me thinking about, you know, what those gray areas are with that, and would this ever carry over into the States?
Do you think it should?
I think we should implement drug testing for sure, which they didn't even really talk about in that video. You know, and they talked about the horse having no blood on them as well. We have a lot of horses that run on Lasix as a preventative for bleeders. So if you have a brand new horse that maybe you don't know needs that medication and they have blood when you come out of the arena, what's that mean, you know? Are they allowed to run on Lasix there? So I don't know. I think there should be more regulations than we have. I think if they did implement it here, it would change a lot of things.
Yeah, it would. Cause I've talked about it as far as now, do you think that horse trainers should be regulated as far as like licensed?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think it's a bad idea. I feel like, a friend of mine had just kind of posted a video that like the backyard trainers are really coming out of the woodwork and teaching children and not capable of teaching children, don't really have enough experience themselves. I think anyone that introduces someone to get into the saddle is positive, but again, it has to be the proper guidance. And then you kind of have to rely on brand new people in the industry to take the initiative to be like, okay, thank you for getting me started, but now I need to seek better training. And a lot of people just don't know the difference. So I think it's a pretty good idea to have some sort of certification.
I mean, you have to be certified to do racehorse training, which I did not know this. I learned this from talking to a random chick on TikTok. She taught me this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why don't they do that across the board? Because, you know, when Yellowstone come out, I've said this like 900 million times, you started getting more people getting interested. They wanted to make a business out of it, blah, 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 blah. Whereas you've had people that, like yourself or other people that have been training literally for years, like their whole life. And now you're competing with somebody that's had a horse maybe a year.
Yeah.
That wants to put themselves up as a business. I mean, you know, if you want to regulate hairdressers, but you don't want to regulate horse trainers, it's like, okay, but trust you to put a 10-year-old kid on a 1,000-pound animal?
Yeah. I think there's so many factors that go into it, and it would be a very difficult thing to regulate.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, let's call it what it is. It's an expensive sport as well. So a lot of times these newer trainers are coming into the industry and doing it a lot cheaper than the more expensive ones. And that's just what new people can afford. So that makes it hard as well. It's a very real thing. So a lot of times people will go with those newer trainers that maybe don't have the best judgment or most experience because that's just what they can afford right now.
Yeah. Now, how many horses do you have total?
I have 4 of my own, my retired horse, my barrel horse, my rope horse, one that I call mine, but if my daughter were in here, she'd fist fight me over it. It's really hers. but we have a 100 stall horse barn. So we each have our own personals. We have between 10 and 15 lesson horses that we use for lessons and trails. And then the rest all belong to boarders.
Yeah. I bet you got some good trail rides out there though.
Yep.
I bet you do have good country.
I always post videos and I'm like, guess where you think we're at? Like, if you don't know, guess where? Cause you'd almost forget you're in New Jersey when you get out on the trails here. There really is some beautiful terrain.
Are you big on that as far as like, you know, performance horses need to be horses, like you need to take them out of the ring. Yeah, that's great.
Oh, yes. My main barrel horse, we do most of our riding out on the trails. One, either quiet walking rides just to clear her head, and I love that just as much. And then I also like to condition her out there because, you know, we can get to big open areas where I can breeze her a little bit and let her stretch out and be a horse, like you said. But it's also like up and down hills and terrain is the best conditioning you can do for your horse and mental. You know, the more we drill them around a clover leaf pattern, the less they're going to enjoy it. I don't care what you say. You know, we do still save time for some dry work in the arena and some schooling, but lots of trail riding.
I had a girl open my brain to this concept. Last year she was on here, a really cool girl. She runs out in like Oklahoma or whatever. And she was like, some of your rodeo horses are more, conditioned than your just barrel jackpot horses, because sometimes they take these horses and they forget that, like what you said, if you just throw them in this pattern 3 or 4 times a week and that's the only thing that you do, you're not doing the best that you can. And these, right. She was saying that these rodeo horses, they hit bad ground, they're in bad weather, they have to go through all this crazy stuff where you think, oh, don't put my horse through that. No, you need to put your horse through that because it'll help them.
Yes. Rodeo horses are, they're elite. They really are. You know, it's very hard to take a Barrel Betty jackpot horse that you've been taking to jackpots where they cancel if it's raining. The ground is going to be perfect. You take your time going in. It's usually a center alleyway gate. And then you get to these rodeos and they just tilled up the grass this morning.
Yeah, that's what she said.
The first rodeo I took one horse to, there was a llama tied to the fence for like one of the clown acts. Oh my, I almost got killed over this llama because my horse had never seen one before.
I believe you.
So they really tolerate some crazy stuff. They're just elite horses. They really are.
I didn't even think about it when she started explaining it. I was like, oh my God, you are so right. But, you know, even if you aren't in those events or you don't go to those events or you don't do anything about it, it is good to even consider just expressing your horses to it. Just to help them out. I mean, just to make them better.
Yeah, because you never know, like, what you're going to experience on the ride from your trailer to an arena, you know? So the more you know that your horse is not fazed by those things, the better off you are, you and your horse.
Yeah, our conditioning their body, really, to be able to do better. Because if you don't work your horse out like you would your own human self, you're not going to do that well.
Yeah, I posted a video the other day, actually, if you're considering rodeoing, how you never really know what the conditions are going to be when you get there. And I was out riding my horse in the mud, because if you don't expose your horse and work them in those conditions, one, you don't know what they can handle, where if the ground's a little sketchy, is it unsafe for your horse to compete there? But if you know that it is safe for your horse, that you're feeling confident going into it because you've already prepared them for that. Where if you only ride when the sun is shining and the weather's beautiful, that's all you're prepared for.
Yeah. Now, I got one last question I want to ask you.
Sure.
What is the, what are you most proud of so far and for your horse career?
My daughter. It has to be my daughter. I definitely have, I grew up in horses, but I've learned a whole lot more along the way. So our goal is always kind of for our children to start off where we're at and then go even further with that. So the more education that I can provide for her, and then the more experiences and opportunities I can provide for her, the happier I am. Just knowing that there's kind of a legacy to follow behind.
Oh, she's going to take on what you've done. And she's only 10, though.
She just turned 11. And she, you know, again, moms always think their kids are incredible, but I just think she really has the potential to do great things, and I hope that she does.
Well, that's a product of your knowledge, you know, so. Well, I mean, she's got a good mom, so I think you guys will be great.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm really glad that you took the time to do this. I love your aesthetic and everything that's going on, and your dog has been so sweet the entire time.
Oh, she won't leave my side. I knew if I didn't have her in here, she'd be scratching at the door the whole time.
I ran across one video that she was in it, and you were, I think you were just in an arena. It looked like just her arena, and somebody asked what kind of dog it was or whatever. It's a pointer. Right?
Yeah, she's a German short hair pointer. They're used for like pheasant hunting, but she loves to be a farm dog. I mean, she does it so well.
She looked really like, just, I vaguely remember you were in the arena and she was just kind of just chilling with you, and you were on a horse and y'all were doing your thing.